Okay. All right. Good evening. Welcome to the March 1st Planning Commission meeting. Sorry for the delay. We had some technical difficulties with our audio. Let's begin with our introductions. I'm Joe Phillips, chairman from North Kitsap.
Good evening. My name is Rick Shattuck. I'm from Central Kitsap, and I've got to say it's great to be back. I missed you all.
Let's see, we'll start with Danielle.
Danielle Dalpit from South Kitsap.
Okay. Carrie.
Calton born Corey, South Kitsap.
Stacy.
Good evening, Stacy Smith, representing South Kitsap.
Alan.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Steve.
Hi, Stephen Bell from Central Kitsap.
Amy.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
And Aaron.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
All right. With that, we'll go over the virtual / hybrid protocol. We ask that everyone have their record their phones and such on mute during the meetings. For internet users, if you wish to speak at the bottom of the your Zoom panel, you'll see a raise hand that will you press that to indicate you wish to speak. And then when your name is called, if we could have you say who you are and where approximately you're from. We do have a 2-minute time limit on public comments. For call-in users, use *9 on your keypad to signal you'd like to comment. And the last 4 digits of the call-in number will be announced, and then the sound will be unmuted. Participants should announce their first last name before speaking. And call-in participants may need to push *6 to unmute their phones. And we do accept written comments. We ask that that be submitted and presented to a staff member or email by 2 p.m. the day prior to the meeting. Written comments are read during the meeting are limited to 2 minutes. For public hearings, we do allow 3 minutes. And to ensure that those written comments are properly included, we ask the date of the meeting that the written comments are intended for, participants' first and last name, whether the participant lives in Kitsap County or not, and the agenda item or subject that you're commenting on. Okay. With that, do I have a motion for adoption of the agenda?
I move we adopt the agenda as presented.
Okay. Do I have a second? I have a second. All those in favor of the agenda, please raise your hands. Say, okay, aye. Unanimous. Okay. Next item on the agenda is the adoption of minutes. Please note, we already did approve December 7th minutes, so we're just approving 12/21 and 1/18. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes for the 12/21 meeting?
I move to adopt the minutes from the 12/21/21 meeting.
Okay. Do I have a second? All right. Thank you. Second. Okay. Are there any comments or amendments to the minutes? Not seeing or hearing any. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please raise your hands to approve. To disapprove and to abstain.
I abstain.
Okay, so 8-1 approved. Okay, do I have a motion for the minutes of 1/18? 22 to approve.
I approve, or I make the motion to approve the meeting minutes from January 18th, 2022.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Thank you, Darlene. Okay. Are there any comments on the minutes and that? Okay, I do have one. On page 2, line 33, we use decline twice, so we need to strike that one on that. Any other amendments? Nope. Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes for 1-18-22, please raise your hands. Okay. All those disapproving? No. And all those abstaining?
I'll abstain.
2. Okay. So we have 7-2. All right. We come to our first general public comment period. Do we have anybody that wishes to speak? Going once, going twice. Okay, seeing nobody wishing to speak, we'll close this comment period now. Okay, we are on agenda item F, the briefing for the 2024 comprehensive plan by Mr. Baker.
Greetings, everybody. My name is Eric Baker. I'm with Kitsap County Commissioner's office. It's been a while since I've been in front of you, but much like Michael Corleone, just when I thought I was out, I get pulled back in. And it, with Angie's leaving us, I am now responsible for heading up the 2024 comprehensive plan amendment or update. So that still is a couple years out, but those couple years are going to go fast. We have spoken with the Board of Commissioners, and we want to get out to all our key stakeholders, and of course, the Planning Commission, to kind of talk about some of the high-level discussions, as well as kind of provide some baseline information for those folks who have not had the joy of working through a comprehensive plan in the past. So with that, I'm going to try and share my screen. It looks like I'm going to get to. That'll be great. Okay, can everybody see an ugly purple screen with yellow writing?
Yes.
All right. Well, this is, again, the kickoff discussion for the 2024 Comprehensive Plan. The Comprehensive Plan is a very key document to Kitsap County. It really kind of establishes a lot of goals and policies, but I'll kind of go through some of that briefly. Why are we required to update our Comprehensive Plan? Well, a Comprehensive Plan is required by the Growth Management Act, which was passed back in 1990. Kitsap County has had a series of comprehensive plans starting in 1998, and then the next in 2006, 2012, 2016, and now moving into 2024. We are responsible for updating them every 8 years. You may note that there was not necessarily 8 years in between some of those updates, and part of that was due to a somewhat difficult relationship we have with GMA, which I'll talk about a little bit more in the future, or in coming up. Last update in 2016, this is due June 1st, 2024. So again, we have a little over 2 years to complete this comprehensive plan. What's in a comprehensive plan? Well, pretty much everything that helps direct county government from land use, which is zoning, and what are called urban growth areas. That's the places we're supposed to put growth. Versus the rural areas where the growth is not supposed to be. We're supposed to size those properly based upon the demand for growth and the amount of space we have, so we don't improperly convert rural areas. Economic development, ensuring that all of our residents have places to work and we have land for commercial businesses and industrial businesses. The environment, that's protection of critical areas and shorelines. Transportation, ensuring that the growth has adequate roads and transit services. Parks, recreations, and open space. Largely, that is our large regional parks and open spaces that you see throughout Kitsap County. Capital facilities, that's all the necessary pipes and services such as schools, fire, broadband in many ways, to serve the population. Housing and human services, this is one that's going to be particularly important as we are amidst the housing crisis that I think we've all acknowledged. And then human services. This housing crisis has displaced a number of folks, forcing them into homelessness. The COVID pandemic has not helped either. Again, housing and human services is likely going to be a pretty strong focus of the 24 update. And then sub-area plans and neighborhood plans. And I'll cover that a little bit more in a moment. So while all of these elements are supposed to focus on our local circumstances, the yellow at the bottom, they are also responsible for being consistent with two other types of documents. The first of which is the countywide planning policies. I believe there may have been some discussion of the countywide planning policies last year when they were being updated. That is a document that is adopted through the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, which is made up of our cities. I believe the Port of Bremerton and our tribes also participate. The countywide planning policies is a required element. Our comprehensive plan must be consistent with the countywide planning policies. So that is kind of a guiding document. And one of those components of the document are going to be establishing population and employment targets, which is how much are we going to grow between now and 2044. The second is the multi-county planning policies. That is handled through the Puget Sound Regional Council. They have a planning document called Vision 2050, which guides Kitsap, Snohomish, King, and Pierce counties, and all of its cities. So it's like the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council on steroids. While GMA does not necessarily require that we are consistent with the multi-county planning policies, Puget Sound Regional Council is our conduit to large quantities of federal transportation dollars. Thus, they need to certify our transportation element of the plan to ensure that it's consistent with the multi-county planning policies. So while GMA doesn't say we have to follow it specifically, we have to follow it pretty carefully to ensure that we are not injuring ourselves when it comes to getting necessary funding for transportation and other services. So let's kind of go through a little bit of the history. As I indicated, Kitsap has a difficult history with meeting GMA requirements. We were actually one of two jurisdictions to at one point be invalid, which is kind of like the death penalty for people doing comprehensive planning back in the 90s. GMA was very difficult for Kitsap County. It was really kind of forcing an entirely different land use pattern than we had been doing. And in the 90s, I think we worked very hard to try to make GMA fit Kitsap County and unfortunately ran afoul of what's called the Growth Management Hearings Board on a number of occasions, creating a series of non-compliant plans as well as invalid plans, which does give you the opportunity that if you're ever going through the hearings board orders, you get to see the words Kitsap and County located in those orders a lot more often than you would expect. That is not a good thing. So those non-compliant plans have always been difficult for Kitsap because it's created uncertainty to the public, uncertainty to developers, and also has cost the county a lot in appeals and redoing plans. Comprehensive plans can cost more than $1 million. Having to do them repeatedly is a significant waste of time. These appeals are not just ancient history. We have been appealed pretty much every comprehensive plan since our first one in 1998. We have a number of interested parties in Kitsap County that has oftentimes some issues with how Kitsap County has elected to grow. We have prevailed in a number of these appeals. But again, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that a number of folks are very invested in our comprehensive plan and are willing to take us to court if they feel that we are not following the Growth Management Act properly. So to a degree, I am kind of that skittish planner as I've been working on these all the time. So I'm always concerned about an appeal because an appeal is a lot of work and, again, a lot of uncertainty to our community. So what are some of the things that we're going to be looking at? Well, the chief thing is to take a look at the next 20 years and try to determine how much population and employment is coming to the county. The Puget Sound Regional Coordinating Council, again, the organization that has King, Pierce, Snohomish, has population and employment targets for all of our cities, as well as Kingston and Silverdale. Those population targets are really trying to focus growth in the cities and in the urban growth areas. Rural areas are not where growth is supposed to occur per the Growth Management Act, but also per the Puget Sound Regional Council. So most of our efforts are to attempt to put as much population and employment into our urban centers as possible to meet the requirements, but also to be able to provide communities that have the services necessary to support themselves. Sewer lines are expensive. Roads are expensive. The more people you can serve in as small an area as possible reduces those costs. And while the development oftentimes pays for the first roads and they pay for the sewer pipes and the sewer pump stations when it gets constructed, they are not on the hook for maintaining them. Kitsap County is running into a series of maintenance issues for growth that happened in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Roads that need to be repaved, pump stations that need to be upgraded, pipes that need to be replaced. Those are all on the government to replace over time. Thus, even though development puts the original infrastructure in, it is in the long-term interest of county government and pretty much all local governments to ensure that we're providing infrastructure as efficiently as possible, which GMA is, again, pushing us to have urban growth that is dense so that we have the least amount of infrastructure costs into the future, and we protect our environment. The most recently, what we're going to be looking at is we're going to be targeting growth largely to the cities, Silverdale and Kingston. Silverdale is the incorporated area that will be receiving the most growth. So when I say incorporated areas, those are the cities. Unincorporated areas, those are the ones that are in the jurisdiction of the county. So Silverdale, while some people may think it's a city, nope, it is a unincorporated area. It's a community in Kitsap County. And it is a regional growth center. So it is a place that we are looking to put as much growth over time to ensure that it becomes a robust city versus kind of the commercial center that it is right now with Ridgetop, but not a lot of other residential. So some of our main past topics we've had is urban growth area sizing. Again, the urban growth areas, We have one around each one of the cities. We have Silverdale and we have Kingston. This is where growth is supposed to occur. We're supposed to have only as much urban growth area as we need for population growth. Anything more than that can be challenged as improperly converting rural areas. And we have been challenged in that way in the past and have unfortunately lost on a few occasions. The second of which is that our urban areas aren't dense enough. A lot of our urban areas followed the old school Kitsap County development model. A lot of cul-de-sacs, a lot of third acre, half acre lots with septic systems, not a lot of sidewalks, very limited transit service. Since the growth management came in the 90s, we have been pushed to densify these areas so that more people can fit into less land. So instead of third acre and half acre lots, you're now looking at fifth acre lots or smaller. You're looking at duplexes, triplexes, townhomes. Higher densities is what the Growth Management Act is looking for Kitsap County. And that is to a degree something that we have been challenged with as, again, that is not the historic development pattern of Kitsap County. And then rural growth, as I have indicated a few times so far, rural growth is frowned upon, that we want to limit the number of folks who are living in the rural areas. They are intended to be preserved in many ways. We already have more lots in the rural area than our 5-acre zoning really would allow for. That has been something that has been highlighted and something that may be highlighted in the 2024 update. Let me pause there. I've said a lot of words. So let me open it up to questions on where I am so far before I move into what could be the new emerging topics that we've never had to address before, but may have to coming up in the 24 update. The chair, do you want me to call on folks, or do you want to?
I can go ahead. Mr. Shattuck, you raised your hand.
Yeah. Eric, just reviewing the schedule, and maybe you're going to get into this. One of the things that I notice is it appears that individual requests for redesignation are going to be looked at in 2022 and then we rolled into the 2024. Yeah. But we did have some carryover, as I remember, from our amendment process a couple of years ago. For example, the Hanley Roofing, where there was going to be a joint study between the city of Port Orchard and the county, is a plan to take those old things that haven't been addressed and roll them into this process still, or are we going to look at those before then?
I do expect that those are going to be rolled into the 2024 update. Again, both the county and cities are responsible for updating their comprehensive plans in 2024. It makes the most sense for especially things like the Hanley approval for the county and city to work kind of as a whole, looking at the whole UGA versus one individual site specific. We will be opening up reclassification requests very early in the process. That actually will be coming up a little later in this presentation. Basically, what a reclassification request is, it's for someone who's living or somebody who wishes to develop in Kitsap County can propose that a zone changes. Basically, say someone is zoned residential and they want it to be commercial, or somebody is in the rural area and would like to be inside an urban growth area, or somebody is in the rural area and believes that they should have a different rural zone. Those are the types of things that we would be opening up for potential submissions for folks to be reviewed and included in the comprehensive plan. But unlike the site-specific process, where each one is looked at independently, these reclassification requests will be looked at in groups so that we can assess the cumulative impacts, and which again helps reduce the cost to the applicant. It also helps reduce the staff time necessary while still accomplishing the holistic comprehensive plan versus individual specific requests that can sometimes be a little more complicated and more expensive for the applicant.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Murphy?
Thank you, Eric, so far for the presentation. So just to reclassify the question maybe, and I'm sorry if I didn't hear it right the first time, are site-specific rezone requests no longer a thing? Therefore, we're not doing them individually in 2022. Is that what I heard right?
The site-specific process was meant to be handled in off years. So if there was to be a process in 2022, which currently the board has not dictated one, or in 2023, at this point, the Board of Commissioners is interested in rolling all of them into a comprehensive 2024 update. So the site-specific process won't be happening in 22 and 23. Instead, we're going to have a reclassification process, which is simpler and more global in 2024. Does that better answer the question, or did I sidestep it one more time?
No, that's okay. So for those that may have had in past processes their individual site-specific under consideration, and it might have been sidelined or tabled because of staff or because of COVID or whatever, those will not be revisited individually. They will be clustered.
They will be included in the 2024 update. The board has not fully indicated whether they will be considered like the reclassification request, or they will be considered separately. That is a good question that I can raise to the board. At this point, I would suspect that they probably will be treated all together, just to ensure that we're calculating the cumulative impacts of all the requests together.
Okay, yeah, and I guess my last question, and then I'll let it go, is just curious if for those that were sort of tabled in the last 24 months, if there's some sort of public notice requirement that they're, that, you know, what they thought they were going to be going through is no longer quite the process.
They will all be notified of their movement into the 2024 process, and they will be notified of exactly how that process is going to proceed. Again, generally the way this works is the applications come in, they're all reviewed, they are put into, again, suites or themes of requests. And then when the alternatives are developed, generally there are three alternatives in a comprehensive plan amendment. There is the current state of affairs. There is the largest option, which usually includes every request. And then there is one in the middle that serves, that is kind of at the middle ground. And the reclassification requests will appear in one or more of those alternatives. Again, oftentimes in groupings versus individual applications. The good news is you get considered more holistically, which oftentimes is good. If anybody remembers the site-specific process, going through the criteria is very rigid, and it sometimes at individual property, it's really hard for it to meet all the criteria, especially when some of the criteria are quite global for the county. Putting them into groups can actually help combat some of those things. People utilize the term spot zoning as a pejorative. It can avoid some of those opinions. Instead, you're looking at something more holistically by UGA or by use type versus that property on that corner that's 4 acres in size and is either good or bad, depending on who's testifying.
Thank you. Yeah, I can see the pros and cons of both. Obviously, every individual property owner would like to think that they're unique and shall be considered as such, but understand that there could be value in them being associated with others under consideration. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have other questions before I move on? Okay. So new elements and requirements. Growth management is always expanding. Growth management, the current bills that are going through the legislative session, which we'll know which ones live and which ones die by the end of next week, could require Kitsap County to include two new elements. Remember, I listed off all those elements, which look pretty meaty all by themselves. They are looking at potentially adding climate change and resiliency as a separate element. Portion of this is oftentimes covered in the environment chapter, but this is a lot more specific to greenhouse gas emissions and how our planning is reducing greenhouse gas emissions and resiliency. Oftentimes that can mean a lot of things, but oftentimes it includes how are you addressing sea level rise? Pretty much how is it going to affect your infrastructure that happens to be on shorelines and floodplains and things like that if sea level rises another 4 inches between now and the end of 2024 or 2044. And that is a currently House Bill 1099 for anybody who's really interested in following along. That is currently has a pretty strong chance of passing, I would assume. So I would expect that top bullet may be less of a could and a you have to by the end of next week. The second of which is salmon recovery. Also, we obviously protect salmon and salmon runs in our environment chapter, but this bill, House Bill 1117, is indicating that we need a salmon recovery specific chapter that talks about net ecological gain, which usually the way we look at critical areas and shorelines is we're trying to achieve no net loss, which pretty much means the development doesn't do anything to the property that is more or less harmful than it was before the development came along. This concept could potentially bring forth net ecological gain. So not only does the development not have to make things worse, it might have to make things better. That bill is likely not going to make it through this session. It feels dead right now. It didn't make one of its cutoffs. Anything can come back, but again, salmon recovery is something that will be considered, but hopefully we won't have to wrestle with this issue amongst all the others in 2024, but we'll know more by the end of next week. And then lastly, we're amidst the housing crisis. So the state legislature last year passed a bill that required jurisdictions not just to provide necessary housing for the population, but adequate housing for certain income levels of the population. This has been due to our affordable housing issues. And instead of affordable housing, I'll use the word housing affordability. Fewer and fewer people are able to buy homes. Fewer and fewer people are currently able to rent apartments. So in the 2024 update, we're very likely going to have to look at our housing stock and take a look at them in the manner of, is that housing stock affordable to people making median household income, or 120% of median household income, or the inverse, 30% of median household income? And the jurisdictions are responsible for planning to achieve those housing targets. I think everyone can understand that's going to be pretty challenging, especially if we have to do it at a countywide level, because 30% of AMI on Bainbridge Island is not 30% of AMI in the city of Bremer or in South Kitsap. So how are these housing stocks going to sort themselves out? That's something that the county and cities are going to have to wrestle with, and probably will be spending a good amount of quality time with this body having those types of discussions. One of the terms that often is included is the term missing middle. That is missing middle housing that is in between the subsidized low income and then the housing that is, quote, affordable. Missing middle housing can include, again, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and even apartment complexes. And Kitsap County has been traditionally and historically single family housing driven. Most of our communities are all single family, usually single family detached. There may be a push for urban growth areas to include a more diverse set of housing types as new development comes in. I'm definitely going to pause there because I just said a lot and there's a lot of thorny, hot button topics in those three bullets. Well, maybe they're only thorny and hot button to me. All right. So some other considerations we're going to have to go through. We have the Central Kitsap Urban Growth Area. That is the area between Rydell Road and pretty much Ross Farm up on Wago Way. That abuts the city of Bremerton, but it's not associated with the city of Bremerton. It is a standalone UGA, just like Silverdale or Kingston. The only difference is this one abuts an existing city, and that existing city is very interested in that UGA being associated with it. And what does association mean? Means that it is intended to annex into the city over time. So when you're thinking about this area, think about Tracyton Boulevard, Fairgrounds Road, Old Military, Illahi, University Point, I think, all is in that UGA. The city and county have fought about it for, well, my entire career. The city, we had a legal challenge and an agreement that we would sort it out by 2022. We had a lot of laudable plans on how to have discussions about that in 2020 and 2021. And I think we all remember what happened during that period of time. Unfortunately, that does not mean we have more time for this. What it does mean is that as of April 2022, the city of Bremerton can annex into that area. So the 2024 update is probably going to want to have a discussion about what is the future of Central Kitsap. Is it soon, someday, part of the city of Bremerton? Should it be reconnected with the city of to a future city of Silverdale? Right now it's detached, it's not connected to it by Barker Creek. Or is it its own thing? Is it going to be its own city someday? I think that's a heady conversation and should be a lot of fun. And then lastly, we have a series of subarea neighborhood plans. Kingston, Suquamish, Manchester, Keyport, Gorst, and Illahee are all subarea plans with specific goals and policies and specific development regulations that apply to their areas. Those likely are going to be dusted off and updated to ensure that it's meeting the needs of the current community while also adhering to the requirements of the Growth Management Act. Any questions or concerns there? Moving on, some of the big documents that are going to be landing on you at some point or another, you will have the comprehensive plan itself. That is the document that has all the goals and policies, all the aspirational hopes of the county, as well as generally how we're hoping to meet those aspirations over time. Then there's the development regulations. That is the comprehensive plan if it was about 120% less readable. It is really where it is the document that actually developers have to follow. That's the zoning requirements, that's setbacks, buffers, all the fun stuff that's written for an attorney, not for a actual normal human being. So the reason that is because these are all challengeable and the code needs to be as specific as possible because the code is the cost of development. Environmental impact statement. You have goals and policies, you have urban growth areas, you have rural code, you have urban code. What is that going to do to stormwater? What is that going to do to roads, wastewater? All the various things that are necessary to accommodate growth. The environmental impact statement assesses all that and makes proposals on exactly how much it will cost over time, both in the more subjective protection of the environment, but also how much it's going to cost in provision of certain infrastructure. Then the capital facilities plan, which is, okay, how is that infrastructure going to get installed? There's a 6-year plan, which is really rigid. Here's the money you have to do these number of projects, these number of roads, these number of pump stations are in the 6-year plans. But we also have to produce a 20-year plan, which pretty much says if you're going to take that many people and that many employees in your community over the next 20 years, you're going to need all of this. And you're going to have to find funding for all of this. So the 6 years is very rigid. The 20 years is a little more prospective in exactly what we're looking for, because I think we all can guarantee predicting 1 or 2 years out in this current market and climate is difficult. 20 years, you have to take with a certain grain of salt. So what are some of the next steps? I'm looking forward to this project, but I really need a consultant to help with all these documents. We have a workforce shortage. I'm certain you've heard on a number of occasions that also applies to the long-range planning staff. We need someone to come on board and help us with the environmental impact statement and help us with the capital facilities plan. The capital facilities plan in particular is going to have to be coordinated with school districts, fire districts, water districts, sewer districts, all these other entities that don't work for the county, have their own jobs, and yet we need them to help provide us the necessary documentation to be able to cast projections 20 years out. We need to make sure this is, there's a website available for all this material to be put on, presentations like this, handouts like you've been provided today, someplace for the public who aren't able to see these presentations to go and participate in the process. This website is intended to be interactive. It isn't just going to be us shoving things out to the public. This is going to be a place where surveys live, where we take polls, where we have interactive back and forths through virtual open houses. There's a lot of things that are going to be happening. This website is going to be one of the core aspects of it. We will be doing a lot of old school outreach as well. As soon as COVID will allow, a lot more in-person work. Like going back to standard open houses, going back to every, as I like to call it, every outhouse, hen house, and dog house in the community, and getting people's opinions of growth over the next 20 years. That will be community and organization kickoff presentations. There'll be multiples of these as we move through the process. Right now, I'm just trying to describe the process to people because not everybody remembers what it looked like in 2016. And as I've described, 2024 is going to bring some new things to the party. Reclassification requests, we just covered that. It will be helpful to know there's been a lot of pent-up demand to alter the comprehensive plan. It really hasn't been changed too much since 2016, so there's a pent-up demand for different zoning, different densities. This is the opportunity for every citizen and every property owner interested in developing their lot in a different way to come forth and make a proposal. We want to do that early. And then it's something called environmental impact statement scoping. That's basically where we figure out, here's all the stuff we're going to review environmentally. And those state statutes that I just referenced earlier, climate change, salmon recovery, if those things pass, the EI scoping gets a lot broader and requires a lot of additional detail. Those are the types of things that you'll probably be seeing over the next few months as we start to move forward. I do expect that it'll be before the Planning Commission a little more regularly. I think a number of you have kind of been through the countywide planning policies at times, but we want to have a few presentations to kind of talk about some of the foundational documents as well as some of the foundational issues of the comprehensive plan. So when I drop the large documents on you, you have context and background on why some of these things have happened. It will be as much fun as I just made it sound. So everybody be, I want to see everyone's excited faces. That's as close as I'm probably going to get. So all this is going to be coming down the pipe. Most importantly, if any of you have any questions or ever have anything that you want to talk about as related to the comprehensive plan, please contact me at my phone number or best yet at my email address. I respond to emails day, night, weekends, family hates it. But it's important for people to get their questions answered as soon as possible because comprehensive plans are full of information, but they're also full of misinformation. And misinformation, if it's given a few days to circulate, is really hard to disabuse. So please ask questions as they come up. Don't hesitate. Mr. Murphy.
So as clear as it is that you could handle all this by yourself, Eric, being the amazing man that you are, what is the county doing from a staffing perspective? How are you guys recruiting? Just talk to us about what you guys are doing. It's a heavy load. I mean, you probably just laid down four elephants and gave us the first forkful. But there's a ways to go. So talk to me about staffing.
Well, I think there are two folks that are on this call. You have Colin Poff and you have Melissa. They are two staffers who will be working on the comprehensive plan. We've also brought on Jim Rogers, who actually used to work for the Department of Public Works as our transportation modeler, who is now also coming over and helping with the comprehensive plan. Additionally, I have the expectation that my policy analysts, I don't work in the Department of Community Development. I work for the commissioners in the policy division. Each commissioner has their own policy staffer. They have their own work, just like I had my own work before this came on. So we're going to have to squeeze it all in. But we do expect that there will be Catherine Schaefer, Jennifer Haro, and Benji Reinhardt are going to be helping the commissioners in their individual districts and their individual sub areas help with those sub-area plans to help get those elements together. I don't want to use the old adage, it takes a village, but it's going to take a village to get this done between policy staff, between public works, parks, human services, as well as the Department of Community Development. Basically, I can only really speak to the long-range folks, as those are the ones that I'm currently working with. We do have a much larger issue on the permit processing end, and I wish I had a rosier perspective on that. It has been very, very difficult to bring on staff. It's been very hard to maintain staff in the era of telecommuting, where you can live anywhere and work for Seattle or King County and get paid King County and Seattle wages. It's very hard for Kitsap County to compete. We are working very hard at helping our develop a wage structure and a working environment that might hope to keep some of our staffing. But for jurisdictions such as Kitsap County, as long as King County and the east side jurisdictions are going to allow full-time telecommuting, as well as paying the wages that are akin to their standard of living over there, it's going to be hard for the Snohomish counties, Pierce counties, and Kitsap counties. And hopefully we're going to be able to get ourselves right-sized and bring on some additional staff. But I don't have necessarily the rosy picture for that, as it is a very, very tough rock to push up a very steep hill.
Well, thank you for answering the question I wasn't really going to ask. I appreciate your transparency, and that's good for Planning Commission to understand.
Mr. Both Shattuck.
For the, you know, the sense of offering a little grace and then admitting some of the realities that we're facing.
Okay, and Mr. Shattuck.
Eric, one of the things that we've run into trouble with in the past has been our land capacity analysis. And looking at the draft schedule, I don't see that as a work item. Is it something I'm missing, or where is that in the plan?
The land capacity analysis, a big chunk of it is located in the buildable lands report. We do have kind of a methodology. Basically, there's two components. There's the methodology, which are the steps you take along the way. And then there's the assumptions that you plug into each one of the steps. The county and the cities all use the same methodology, all the same steps, yet we all have different assumptions. The buildable lands report that was adopted last year contains a series of good, solid assumptions. We may have to tweak those over time. And I think as you're looking at that schedule, you probably should be looking at the preliminary alternative development section. Again, this schedule is not as detailed as it will be once I get a contractor on board. That's where all the real nitty-gritty is going to be included. So I expect there'll be land capacity discussion at that point, especially as we start to address our housing needs and all the various components that come in to the cost of housing in our community.
Thank you.
Okay. Believe that's it for comments at this time.
That's all that I have. I greatly appreciate your folks' time. I hope you will have patience with me over the next 2 years as I come and give what will feel like esoteric presentations, but ultimately like a serialized drama will all pay off at the end.
Okay. Thank you.
A little bit like Lost. Oh, wait, no, Lost didn't pay off at the end. Bad example.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Baker. The next agenda item is the briefing for the Bicycle Electrical Vehicle Code. Melissa Shoemaker.
Thanks, Chair Phillips. If I may suggest a slight revision, and it may have been something that would have been better done during the introduction period, but it did work out well because Commissioner Murphy asked a salient question. Colin and Jim are the two new planners, and we were hoping that they could introduce themselves and just tell you a little bit about themselves. And then I'll do the briefing and then we can be done.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Jim Rogers, and I was previously with the county and Public Works as a transportation planner for almost 15 years. And so I'm happy to be back with DCD now. I've been through three comprehensive plan updates with the county, and so this will be number four. So looking forward to working on it with you.
Okay, thank you. And Colin? I believe you're muted.
Can't hear you, Colin.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
There we go.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, Colin Poff. I've been with the county for about a year and a half. I saw all of you when I did an open space application a while back. I was working with DSC, doing a lot of plan review, but expressed my interest throughout that in doing comp planning. And so here I am, and looking forward to the next couple of years of being fully involved in the comprehensive plan. I'll be first starting out with the regional centers work that Eric talked about, as well as the land use reclassifications, and then most of the other work going forward. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks.
And just for a little additional clarity to get back at Commissioner Murphy's question, Colin and Darren Gurney essentially switched positions. So that's why you don't see Darren, and you probably won't expect to see him for a while, but there is still that capacity that Colin was taking care of on the DSE side.
Yep.
Okay, so for the briefing, I'm going to keep it really quick with a little bit of additional background for our new commissioners. So I am working on this bicycle parking and electric vehicle charging code update. The scope currently is to provide guidance for bicycle parking and electric vehicle charging facilities for new construction and applicable redevelopment in urban areas, rural commercial and industrial zones, and landmarks. We're going to do that by establishing minimum standards and then encouraging the provision of additional facilities via incentives. And those minimum standards include things like location, dimension, material, design, numeric standards. And then as necessary, we can revise or add definitions. I say current scope because one of the things that has happened since the last time I met with you about this is we kicked off public outreach for this code update. Beginning of February, we did a gov delivery announcement that was accompanied by social media posts, as well as personalized letters to approximately 150 different groups, agencies, et cetera, throughout Kitsap County. And then also visited all of the Kitsap County CACs in January and February. So a survey that was open to the public was a particular highlight of all of those kickoff activities. We also had it featured on our project website. So the survey closed and we received 195 responses. One of the things that was a common theme in the write-in questions that were available on that survey was a lot of interest in including electric bicycles as well. So I expect that I'm probably going to be going back to the board to ask to expand the scope. I'm not sure what form that's going to look like because I'm not actually sure what the best way to charge an electric bike is. I do suspect there are differences between the voltage for electric vehicles and for electric bikes. So it's going to really depend on where it makes sense to include them. But I do think that based on the response, including them makes a fair amount of sense. I had indicated before that I was also going to be having a workshop group work on draft code language. With those kickoff emails, a large number of the groups that I had identified as being integral to the process and who should be represented on that workshop group didn't actually respond. So I have been working on getting additional outreach to those groups to make sure that we do get those folks included on the workshop group. We also didn't receive any responses to the survey that we had prepared for the development community. So I'm going to be doing some additional outreach to KBA as well. We don't want to do this code update without their input because it is going to affect them quite a lot. And more than anything, I think that we need to know what incentives make the most sense for developers. Doesn't make a lot of sense to design incentives that won't be used. So that's where that's at. I've been a little bit delayed with it. I am right in the middle of getting the zoning use table update to the board for their deliberations. So if there are any questions about, I guess, either of those two projects, happy to answer them.
Not seeing any. So I have one question about this. So your comments about e-bikes being included in there, was it specifically to establish charging stations for them?
Yeah, because people are using them so much more frequently, and they do, both from a transportation perspective, because you can get a lot more places with an e-bike, especially because it's a fairly hilly community. And so that is where we're looking at with that.
Just a side comment on that. I do own an e-bike.
And, oh, okay.
So I can put almost 100 miles on it before it needs charging.
Okay.
So if I was commuting, I don't think I would be much concerned about charging because I can go back and forth.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And right now there's no standard outlet Look. Design for okay. for bikes. So that's a real sticky one to get into.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Commissioner Murphy.
And I think just in the research that I've done about them, Joey, correct me if I'm wrong as an owner, the battery is the thing you take with you that is the most expensive and would get your bike stolen. And so maybe there's a little bit of dimensional change for the parking of the bike related to the rack.
Right.
Or maybe a rack has to be half standard, half e-bike rack, and maybe that changes our clearances around racks. But I think you take the battery off the bike and take it indoors for a few reasons.
Some of your less expensive ones, yes, easily taken off. Your more expensive bikes, no. It's integrated into the bike and you can't remove it. Plus, you do bring up a good point of I'm very, very reluctant to be more than 5 feet away from my bike if I'm off of it, unless it's in my garage. So, but that's, you know, you guys are addressing that. So,
yeah, I had an e-bike that I used to go to the ferry for the first year or so that I lived here, and it was an inexpensive one. I bought it used from a coworker, and the battery was removable, but I never removed it, and I just locked it in on a regular bike rack without any issues. But it was very, very heavy, and so it was only it worked on like the kind of bike racks that you like pull up next to and just lock. And it was the same size as a regular bike, so it fit just fine. But you couldn't, you know, the vertical racks that you like put it up like that. There's no way that you could do that. I couldn't. It was quite heavy. But it had a removable battery. I never removed it. It locked in. It had like a key to get the battery out, and I never had any issues. But this was in Kingston, right next to the ferry, so it was pretty safe.
Okay. Any other questions, comments for Ms. Shoemaker? No? Okay, thank you for your presentation. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you. Okay, with that, we come to our second general public comment period. Looking to see if we have anyone that wishes to speak. Going once, going twice, I don't see anyone. So we will close that period. And item I, for the good of the order or the commissioner comments. Let's see, I did have Amanda place on there that we have the Public Works Stormwater from the Department of Ecology is they're requiring an update. So we are going to be getting a briefing from them on that in the near future, just to give everyone a heads up of what's coming down the line. Does anybody else have a Commissioner Smith?
I ask, because I'm not familiar with the acronym on the agenda, BMPs for existing businesses. What does that stand for?
BMPs.
Best management practices.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you.
Okay, with no more comments on that, do I have a motion for adjournment? Oh, wait, before I adjourn, we are welcoming back Commissioner Beam from his short time off of the commission, and Commissioner Shattuck is now back with us after a longer absence. So we are now all 9 members strong. So it's good to have the board back in the right size and everybody's participating. Okay, do I have a motion for adjournment? Commissioner Murphy, thank you. All those in favor of adjourning? Okay. All right, we will see you next week. All right, good night.
Thank you.
Staff didn't want to adjourn. Nobody raised their hand.
They left
6:48 and they just want to stick around.
Say, Aaron, I like that beard, bud. That's sweet.
Hey, the mask looks good on you.
I know, that's what I figured. If you can't grow a beard, this is what you do.
Yeah, that's a nice upgrade, Richard. It's fun to have you back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, being here late.